From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska. This is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. It is August 17th, 2011, a beautiful Wednesday afternoon up here in Alaska. And on the line, we have our co-host calling in from Denver. Michelle, how are you?
I am great, and I'm sorry that I got on so late. I had a call, you know. You've got me doing a radio show, which is super fun, but I'm also running the business today all by myself, which means I got to answer phone calls.
Hey, that's no problem. We're keeping our, I guess it's a daily almost schedule of the radio show. We're doing two or three shows a week here. Got a lot of great guests in the last few shows as well as a few coming up. Michelle, anything you want to announce before we get started? We only have a half-hour show today with our guest, a veterinarian from the Veterinary Referral Center of Colorado. Do you have anything you need to add, Michelle?
You know, I would just like to put a shout-out out there to all of our clients here in Denver who have been 100% supportive of me and of our son Kyle and of you. You know, we've got a lot of people here in Denver that have been satisfied clients over the last decade, and they know we're expanding to Alaska, and I might be going to Alaska and not coming back, and everybody's been really supportive. For our clients out there that have not experienced Denver Dog Works, you know, give us a try. We're expanding. We're going to be Alaska Dog Works very soon. I am our service dog trainer. I have been getting flooded with phone calls, especially this week, for people looking for service dog trainers. Doesn't matter that I'm in Alaska. I can train your dog. I can come to you. We are very unique in our approach. So give me a call. I'm more than happy to explain it and hopefully help you design a program that's going to make your life better.
And that phone number is 303-578-9881 or denverdogworks.com is our main website. So today, Michelle, we have a veterinarian on. Her name is Dr. Jenna Ashton. She is a board-certified veterinarian in internal medicine, and she works at the Veterinary Referral Center of Colorado. I know you and I are both very familiar with that place. I don't know if we've ever taken our dogs there, but we've referred a whole bunch of clients there over the years, and I know those guys over there do great work. So without further ado, yes?
Robert, would you,
yes.
I have to just tag you on this. Did you say turtle medicine or internal?
Internal medicine. I haven't touched a turtle since vet school. So I want to introduce our guest today, Dr. Jenna Ashton. Dr. Ashton, how are you today?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here today to help you guys out.
And you don't mind if I call you Jenna? We talked earlier in the show.
Absolutely
that's a little easier
not.
Than saying doctor. Jenna, I know that you are an internal medicine veterinarian there at the VRCC, and I received your bio from the press agent or publicist or whatever they're calling those guys over there. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get involved in veterinary work and that sort of thing?
You know, it's the standard story. I've always loved animals, and I've wanted to be a veterinarian since I've been a little girl. So it's pretty much been my only passion. So I got into I did both my master's and my veterinary degree down at University of Florida, so I'm a big Gators fan. And then I did an internship out here in Colorado, and I just finished up my residency at Michigan Veterinary Specialist in Southfield, Michigan.
Very cool. So I have to ask one question since you are in Denver and you are a Gator. What's going on with Tim Tebow?
You might need longer than a half hour to get into that with me. I am a fan, though, I have to say.
Robert, you cannot tweet and get insider information for our fantasy football, okay?
So Tebow Mania is alive and well in Denver, and I know there's a little bit of a controversy on whether he should play or not. I don't even know if you're a Bronco fan, but he brings great passion. Very good,
yes,
very good. He's
absolutely
bringing great passion to the Mile High City, I know. So I'm sure he'll be able to play before too long, and you can root on the Gators as well as the
Broncos. I think he will do them quite proud, absolutely.
I hope
absolutely.
So, I hope so, too. So you went to school at the University of Florida, as you mentioned, and you specialize in internal medicine. So for our listeners out there that don't have a firm grasp on that, what is internal medicine? Is it everything in the body, you know, all of the organs and things, or is it kind of a specialty of a particular part?
Yeah, I tell my clients I kind of do everything you can't see. So all the internal stuff.
Okay.
So no skin, no surgery, but any organ inside the body that you can't see. Except the heart, usually I refer those patients to a cardiologist.
And I know we're going to touch on diabetes. That's a big problem for dogs and a lot of working dogs that we deal with. It's a real big problem. We even have one in our kennel that is diabetic, and I want to tell that story in a little while. But what are you seeing, Jenna, in terms of problems with dogs in, you know, just your basic pet dogs internally?
I guess it depends on the age group. Big problems are probably kidney disease and kidney failure. A lot of underlying GI disease is pretty prevalent, and I think a lot of people don't really pick up on that. And diabetes is another big one. Those are probably big three ones. Older dogs tend to get some respiratory disorders like chronic bronchitis, things like that, but those are probably, and there's always liver disease. You know, a lot of breeds are predisposed to certain endocrine disorders or other certain organs. They tend to have diseases hit them more prevalently than others, and a lot of, you know, dogs get certain liver conditions as well.
Well, let's touch on that for just a second. Predisposition to different types of things. A lot of people, when they think of purebred dogs, they only see what's on the outside. And, you know, as a breeder for years, we talk about, it's not just the looks, it's also all of that stuff on the inside that makes a dog a dog. What are you finding in terms of these predisposed conditions with particular breeds? Can you mention some of the breeds that you guys have come in contact with there and some of the things that are kind of prevalent in those breeds?
Yeah. Labradors are a breed that gets, and Dobermans tend to get a lot of liver conditions like chronic active hepatitis. And a lot of times, animals that are born with those diseases, they don't show up until later in life when the animal actually starts becoming clinical for that disease. So it's always good if you do have a breed that is predisposed to a certain condition to monitor them a little bit more closely, even if they are healthy. So we can kind of get a jump on those diseases before they require a lot of treatment, or we may not even be able to treat them at some point. Huskies are a breed that gets a lot of eosinophilic diseases. So they can have, eosinophils are a white blood cell, and they can get respiratory conditions from that. They can have food allergies. Those are a couple of the breeds probably that you guys deal with. Schnauzers are a big dog, you know, a big breed that get pancreatitis and high fat levels in their bloodstream.
So with internal medicine and veterinary care in general, it's so close to the way that that things are found out about in the human side of medicine, you know, with the blood work and that sort of thing. And I'd like you to talk about that a little bit, you know, because dogs are so close to us in terms of the way that the system is kind of working, right?
Yes, correct, absolutely, except they age a little bit more faster than we do, a little bit more quickly than we do. So, you know, when we have our older pets, I call them our senior citizens, you know, depending on the size of your dog, I'd say 8 years in a bigger, larger breed dog, you know, 10 years maybe in a smaller breed dog or medium breed dog, they're, you know, 6 months to aging to us is a couple years to them. And so I always recommend when they get to that age group of, you know, checking blood work maybe every 6 months just to make sure we catch changes sooner rather than later in those breeds.
And with a lot of internal problems, whether it be disease, illness, or allergies or anything like that, what do you think the biggest cause is? Is it cancer? Is it diet? Is it environment? What do you think's going on there?
You know, that's the million-dollar question. It's so hard to say. Cancer is definitely very prevalent, especially in older dogs. I have seen it in younger, middle-aged dogs, unfortunately. Certain breeds tend to be more predisposed than others to that condition. I think diet with some of our patients absolutely plays a key role, especially if they have food allergies. Certain diets contribute to obesity, you know, and obesity is one of the biggest things I think our pets battle. They love food. We love our pets, so we want to give them what they love. And
right,
sometimes
right.
We create more of them to love than there should be, so...
And that's a great point to make about diet. And I tell my clients all the time, if you know, whether the dog is gaining or losing weight, if it's a 50-pound dog, 5 pounds is 10% of their body weight. And if you think about that in a, you know, in a regular sized man, you know, 200-pound, 6-foot man, 10% of his body weight is 20 pounds one way or the other. That's a heck of a lot of weight, isn't it?
It's a lot of weight. It's a lot of weight. And some of our pets, especially the really furry ones, it's hard to tell sometimes when they're losing weight until they've lost a lot of weight. So it's always good just to run your hands over your pet, make sure, you know, their ribs aren't sticking out when you feel them, make sure their hip bones aren't really prominent, especially under those, like, huskies and breeds that have a lot thicker hair coat, for sure.
So when you're educating your pet owners about diet and obesity and or dogs that may be too thin, what is kind of the standard talk you guys give those owners? Do you say this is how you should feed and, you know, do this and do that? Kind of give us your rundown of what you tell the folks.
Yeah, it's so hard to gauge what body weight each dog should be at. And so the way I instruct owners to tell them that their dog's at an ideal body weight is you want to be able to run your hands over their ribs and feel them but not have them be prominent, and you don't want to have to go digging for them. If you have to go digging for them, they're a little too heavy. And like every young lady likes to have a nice waist, so should your dog, whether it's a boy or girl, they should have a little bit of waist definition as well. So that's kind of when you know that your dog's at an ideal body weight. I'm okay feeding a good, you know, over-the-counter diet as long as you're not overfeeding them. And if your pet's obese, basically I just recommend cutting back maybe about 25% of what you're feeding them per meal or total per day. And also treats. Treats are huge. You know, a couple dog treats to them is like us eating 2 or 3 Big Macs a day. So you don't realize how much calories are and fat are packed in those dog treats.
That's what makes them so tasty. That's why they're doing tricks.
I know. Right. And they don't care what they get. They're just happy you're giving them something. So you can give them a little kibble of food. Carrots are a good substitute. Ice cubes, you know, straight protein like turkey breasts, something like that. They're happy getting anything.
Right. Michelle, do you have a question for Dr. Ashton?
No, I apologize, though, for Damien the Doberman. He gets a little agitated by the flies, and Dawson's gonna have a lot of flies right now. You know, what I run into a lot here at our training center, you know, I deal with every breed out there and every breed in between, all of the mixed breeds, all of the proud owners of mutts, and all of the proud owners of the designer breeds. What I see the most is overfeeding of the wrong food or underfeeding of the wrong food. What I'm seeing is very popular, the raw diets, and the dogs are not getting their nutritional needs met. I'm not against the raw diets. I have fed raw diets in the past. Our sled dogs are on a raw diet. I'm fine with a raw diet. But if you don't know what you're doing, I suggest that people always contact their veterinarian, because they'll say, oh, well, my dog's thin, and you can see his ribs and his hips, and that's okay because he's on a raw diet. And I'll say, you know what? You're starving your dog to the point where he's consuming his own muscle mass, and I don't care if he's eating raw protein or not. He's not getting enough to suffice his muscular needs. And if you can go into that a little bit, that would be helpful, because the other end of the spectrum is we have people feeding kibble to the point where the dogs are so obese that they're not recognizing that either.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Yeah, the raw diets are becoming very popular, as well as, like, organic diets. You know, I mean, our dogs are carnivores. They've grown up on a meat-based diet. I understand the theory behind the raw-based diets. That being said, they aren't totally balanced. And the biggest threat is honestly to human public health with getting salmonella and food poisoning with the pet owners. But if you are going to feed a raw diet, it definitely has to be well balanced. You have to take care in handling the food and make sure that it's balanced with vitamins and the minerals that are necessary. Animals that are on raw diets, I've seen that have, you know, chronic diarrhea issues, things like that, and those animals need to get on a veterinary prescription, you know, veterinary approved diet rather than just a raw diet to help kind of, those animals can't handle those raw diets as well, for sure.
That's a great point. Oh, yes. That, you know, we hear that so often about, you know, the fad of the day, whether it's something they found out about on the internet or they heard about from another dog owner, and then they just try it and they figure out if it's going to work or not. And a lot of times people just aren't quite sure of if it's the appropriate thing. They think if their friends or their colleagues are doing it, they need to do it too in terms of the right food for your dog. But it's just like us, you know, some of us can eat a Big Mac and have no problems. Other people, have problems eating that sort of stuff. So I think those are all great points. So we're talking to Dr. Jenna Ashton. She is an internal medicine doc over at Veterinary Referral Center of Colorado. This is a national show, but she's hitting on a lot of great points about the inside workings of our furry friends, our dogs. So my next point in this next segment, Jenna, is diabetes. And we mentioned it at the beginning of the show about it being very prevalent in a lot of different breeds of dogs, and in particular a lot of working dogs for some reason. We have a dog over at our sled dog yard. I'm partners with another couple in our sledding adventures, and there's an older dog. His name is Chester. He's an Alaskan Husky, and you know, it's the typical thing that occurred. He started urinating a lot. He started drinking a lot. He started losing weight relatively quickly, and within like a month or two, he had already gone blind and all those sorts of things, and we put him on insulin and changed his diet and all those sorts of things. But it happened very quickly. Can you talk to us about diabetes in dogs, what to look for, you know, some real big red flags or alarm signs and that sort of thing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you touched on a lot of those too. As soon as, you know, one of the earliest signs is increased thirst and increased urination. So as soon as you see that in your pet, it would be great to get in and get blood work checked, because that's going to tell us if the glucose is normal or not. Also, those dogs tend to have a really good appetite and are losing weight in spite of that appetite until the glucose gets too high where they don't want to eat anymore. So those are probably the earliest signs to watch for. Diabetes is more common in middle-aged to older dogs. So again, that's important for routine blood work, so we can kind of catch those things before they get to the point of no return. So those are probably the biggest clinical signs that an owner would notice at home. And on routine blood work, CBC, chem, and urinalysis, all those coupled together, your veterinarian would be able to diagnose your dog with diabetes.
And can you tell us about the treatments that are available? With Chester, we're giving him a double dose, you know, twice a day shots of insulin. And I believe it's just human insulin, you know, the same type of stuff that you would give to a human diabetic. Can you tell us about some of the treatment options that are available?
Yeah, absolutely. Obese dogs tend to be ones that develop diabetes fairly readily. So getting them on a diet and getting them to lose weight helps regulate the diabetes. You're never going to cure your patient, your pet, of having diabetes. Once they become a diabetic, they're like most humans, type 1 diabetes, where you require insulin the rest of your life. Cats are a little bit different in that they can actually go into diabetic remission and may not require insulin if they're on the appropriate diet, things like that. With our canine patients, most of the time we need to put them on diet, so a low carbohydrate, highly digestible diet, sometimes a little bit higher in fiber, can help control their diabetes, and then insulin. There are oral glycemics that you can use, but they tend not to work as well in our dogs as they do in our cats. So those are the options, and most of the insulins out there now are human-based, which are acceptable to use in our dogs. Dog insulin is most similar to pig insulin, so that's another option for our veterinary products that are available to us. But yeah, I'm assuming your dog's on NPH, Novalin N?
Yes. And yep, we give him, yep. I think it's either 5 or 10 milligrams a day. You know, twice a day is what he's getting, and you know, he's pretty much he's still a very happy dog, still responding very well, and still very energetic and things. But he you know, it just all of a sudden just kind of just slapped him in the face, and the mm-hmm. next thing you know is, wow, we have to take him to the vet to find out what's wrong. So can you hit on what the deal is with the blindness with these dogs? It appeared that, you know, within a matter of a month or two, our dog Chester, he pretty much went from a full-sighted dog to very limited sight at all right now. Why is that so prevalent in diabetes?
Yeah, most of our diabetics do develop cataracts at some point, and that's what causes them to go blind. You know, there are surgeries that you can have done to remove the lens capsule, because basically the lens capsule crystallizes and doesn't allow light to get in the back of the eye. And so there are ophthalmologists out there that are able to take out that lens and let your pet see again if that does happen. The diabetics that tend to develop cataracts, they are ones that are not well controlled. However, even well controlled diabetics can eventually develop cataracts. So that's definitely a frustrating part, both for the veterinarians as well as the pet owners. That being said, dogs do so well when they're blind and can't see, as long as you don't change up their environment. They know where they've grown up. They know your house. They know their yard. And they know the walks that you take them on every day. And so it's a little scary at first for them, but they adapt quite well if you cannot afford to do the cataract surgery to restore their vision.
And you mentioned that it is a lifelong process or treatment that they have to be on. And our dog, he's I'm not sure exactly. He's not my personal dog, but I think he's well over 10, 11, or 12 years old. So he's up there in terms of age.
Yeah.
But when you talk about lifetime treatment, is there any drawbacks to that? Is it really kind of a hindrance on life expectancy and that sort of thing?
It shouldn't decrease their life expectancy as long as their diabetes is well controlled. It's expensive. It's not a cheap disease to treat just because of monitoring and giving the insulin. I mean, insulin expires after 8 weeks, basically, in your refrigerator. I generally tell an owner to get a new vial. And so that can really add up, as well as, you know, the monthly or 6 months monitoring that you need to do with your diabetics. So, yeah, it changes your lifestyle. You know, you need to have somebody who, if you go on vacation, is able to give your dog that medication, because they require it twice a day,
right,
on a fairly routine schedule, for sure.
And with that schedule, a very important part of that is regulating, of course, that's what the medicine is for, is to regulate those blood sugars and things. What can you tell us as a veterinarian in regards to, you know, the daily routine of a dog that's diabetic? I know that you shouldn't give this insulin if they don't eat or they miss meals and that sort of thing. What can you tell us as a vet?
So actually, that's a big misconception out there with pet owners, that your dog requires insulin whether or not he eats. It's just the amount that you give him. So if your pet eats probably less than a quarter of their meal, I recommend giving half the dose of insulin that they normally get. So say your dog's on 10 units of insulin. If he doesn't eat or eats less than a quarter of his meal, go ahead and give him 5 units. They absolutely need insulin. It's when pet owners stop giving the insulin that the dog starts spiraling out of control and we get in a vicious cycle and they become DKA or diabetic ketoacidosis. And at that point is when they need to be hospitalized usually. So in order to help avoid that, that's definitely one of the things that you need to do.
So
generally
can you
recommend, yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Finish your point there.
I was just going to say, you know, in a dog that's finicky, you want to wait till at least they eat over half their meal till you give them their full dose of insulin. Don't give it to them before they eat their meal, because once you give it to them, you can't reverse its action.
Right. So tell us a little bit about what happens in case something goes awry. You said they spiral out of control. What are we looking at if that does happen in terms of symptoms and signs and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So if your pet stops eating, starts vomiting, acting very lethargic, those are big signs that they're not doing well, and they may be getting an insulin overdose at that point, especially if they're not eating and you're giving them their full dose of insulin and they develop the opposite of what we want, which is low blood sugar. So for every diabetic owner, they should have like Karo syrup at home or something, or even normal molasses to be able to rub on their pet's gums if they notice that they're very listless and just laying there, to at least get their blood sugar up enough and give them enough time to be able to take their pet to a veterinarian to be seen and actually determine what's going on.
Does this happen real quick?
It can happen after a couple days. Yeah, after a couple days for sure. And it depends on what your dog's doing. If he's vomiting and getting dehydrated and you're not giving the insulin, yeah, things spiral out of control pretty quickly.
Gotcha. So we're talking to Dr. Jenna Ashton of Veterinary Referral Center of Colorado. She is an internal medicine vet over there. Michelle, we have 2 minutes left. Do you have any other questions for our guest today?
Well, I've used VRCC. I know you haven't, but my parents have taken our dogs there, unfortunately, more times than we'd like to. I think that the diabetic topic today is really good. It's letting people know that it is a manageable illness that you can handle helping your dog through. My biggest thing, though, is with Chester, I think that it happened a little bit slower than what Robert and the other people were aware of. They see him every day. I don't see him every day. And when I was there in November, I noticed, I'm like, hey, he's pretty chubby. And, and there were just some signs that I had noticed that you mentioned that I didn't know until now were signs of diabetes in him. I noticed at that time that I said, Robert, I think he's got a little bit of a cataract going on, and he's overweight. Is he retired? I asked stupid questions like that. But now that I look back, I think I was recognizing exactly what you guys are describing. He was probably in the beginning stages of diabetes back in November. Mm-hmm. And then when I had seen him just this last July, this chubby little Chester literally went from being fat and happy to skin and bones in just that short of a period of time. And Robert had mentioned that it was even faster than that, like it was almost overnight that he just dropped his weight. But yeah. Based on those symptoms that you're describing, most people don't know that those are diabetic symptoms, as I didn't. And I've been dealing with dogs my entire life. I didn't know that cataracts and, you know, obesity can be two signs of diabetics, you know. So I think that that's great information to get out there for people.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely appreciate your time, Dr. Ashton. Is there anything else you would like to add? If we run over a minute or two, not a big deal on our
end. Not a big deal. Yeah, not a big deal here either.
Tell us anything else you want to mention while we have you on the air here.
I guess I don't want pet owners to second guess what they're seeing in their pets. You know, they know them best. And the minute a subtle change happens, that could be a big deal and the start of something even bigger. You know, so as soon as you notice that something's not normal with your pet, it does not hurt to have them seen or even call your veterinarian and ask them, you know, should I bring him in? Do you think he needs to be seen at this point? Like I said, a lot of pet owners are like, oh yeah, I noticed that, but I didn't think it was a big deal. But any little change off the normal routine can turn into a big deal, whether it's over a couple days or a couple weeks or a couple months. And so don't second guess yourself. If you don't think your pet's right, it never hurts to have them be seen or to call and talk to somebody.
And that's a great point. And like Michelle mentioned, you know, if you see your dogs every day, you might not see the subtle changes. But of course, if your friends or neighbors say, hey, old Rover, he just doesn't look quite right. That's a very sure sign that something is probably going on, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. So we're talking to Dr. Jenna Ashton, an internal medicine veterinarian at VRCC. How do people get in contact with you guys over there? Do you guys have a website, a phone number you guys want to give out, whatever you want to do to get people interested in your guys' clinic?
Yeah, we do have a website. It's www.vrcc.com. And we do have a phone number. I don't have it memorized since I just started.
That's okay.
I have it. It's 303-874-2055.
Great. And we'll definitely keep in touch. And if we ever have any other topics that we may want to mention, we'll definitely have you back on because, you know.
Absolutely.
We always talk a lot about health, and you know, it's great to have a resource out there that can really get down and dirty and talk to us about some of these things that a lot of pet owners are either missing or taking for granted. So, Dr. Ashton, I appreciate you being on, taking time out of your busy day, and if we have any issues, we'll definitely send over some dogs your way. You guys aren't too far from our training center either, so I appreciate your guys' work, and you guys are doing great things over there.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me on. Please don't hesitate to call me anytime if you need anything. So
no
I'm
problem.
Here.
And if we ever have a show about the Broncos and Tim Tebow, we'll have to get a Gator
Absolutely.
Expert on for sure.
I will be there.
Sounds good. So on behalf of Dr. Jenna Ashton of Veterinary Referral Center and our co-host Michelle calling in from Denver Dog Works, this is Robert Forto. Never forget your dreams. We'll see you guys on Sunday. Goodbye.